The following podcast may contain discussions supported by science that may be considered dangerous to some listeners and conspiracy theorists. Discretion is advised.
The Three Down Greencast is brought to you by Lucky Bastard Distillers, Saskatchewan's premier distillery, and by the Pilot Bowens Brewing Company, brewed in the heart of Regina. Welcome to the Three Down Greencast. You are listening to the internet's only... Well, that's an embarrassing way to lose podcast. That works on a couple of levels today. I'm Joel Gaston with John Fraser, as usual. Yes, lots to get to this week, as I think it's safe to say. We have our first truly bad and ugly loss for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders this year, following a score that, quite frankly, was flattering against the Edmonton Elks this week.
Oh, yeah.
As they returned the opening kickoff, and then from then on out, everything else went wrong. So we will get into that game and a whole bunch more. But it may not have been the most embarrassing way to lose this week, because at least in this case, you lost to an opponent that played out of their minds. And just, you know, over the course of an 18-game season, even bad teams have those days.
Yes, it will happen.
But there was a moment, and I think this is very befitting of this podcast for us to talk about it. There was a high jumper, pole vaulter.
Pole vaulter at the Olympics.
Do you know the country? I forget what country he was from.
I want to say it's France. Like, he was definitely wearing a blue leotard because... I've seen the videos, and even I will admit, I am both a little distracted and a little humbled. Not by his pole vaulting skill.
Oh, good. It's the first Google thing.
Oh, good. It's the first Google.
Well, if you put in pole vaulter, the first one is the first result, the option that comes up is hits nuts.
Well, I'm glad that
it's France. It is France.
See, I honestly thought that Google search would be more like pole vaulter with ginormous dong or something.
I mean, I'm
right?
sure that's there, but it's the French pole vaulter Anthony Amrati. Yes, was disqualified. Well, because he failed to clear the vault. He didn't make his jump because his junk got in the way.
I'm sorry. Like, I just, like, on one hand, that sucks. Like, it sucks to lose at any event. But on the second hand, for the rest of this guy's life, you are going to be known as the Olympian with the giant tong that couldn't clear the vault. Like, it's really, it's a win-win for this guy, right? Like, and now the endorsement should be lining up.
I mean, this guy's got to get a Manscaped one, right? Like,
oh, 100%. Like, he's got to be the new face of Manscaped. Trojan should be out there. Maybe Viagra, right? Like, but it's just, it's funny in a week of embarrassing losses. And as we sit here on the verge of World War III and economic collapse here on this wonderful Monday, It's nice to see that we can all laugh. And really, what really sucks, like, I can't think.
I mean, yes, there is, like, obviously a weird upside to this as well, if you really want to think about it, but
upside.
It's got to, you know, train your entire life to do this, and then to go out in that manner. Like, it's one thing to just, you just keep hitting the bar and you can't clear it. It's like, okay, I did my best.
Right.
And then you'll get knocked out because you couldn't quite clear it because of your parts is it's also very tough. And there's going to be a lot of work with that guy's mental coach to probably get over this.
oh, certainly. Maybe, as the classic Seinfeld episode, would indicate, maybe he should have gone in the pool before starting the pole vault event, you know, shrinkage and all that. So
maybe he'll petition for pole vault to be moved to the Winter Olympics.
I mean, we were discussing last week games that should be, or sports that should be moved from summer to winter. Mm-hmm. This man's got a case, you know, turn pole vault into a winter sport. Away you go. I'm sure there's inherent dangers with those super bendy poles snapping. But, you know, although I do feel like this is going to work out to endorsements and stuff for this guy. But you're right. You absolutely got to feel for him.
It goes back to a theory of mine, and it usually applies more to team sports.
Okay.
But if you're going to suck and you're going to be awful, just be so bad and awful that everyone remembers. So, I mean, I don't know if this guy's actually good at pole vault or not, obviously, but We will always remember the way he did not win the Olympics, or at least move on to another stage of the Olympics.
Well, it's like the Turkish shooting guy, right? That got the silver medal.
Where's Alexander Degg now?
Yeah, exactly, right?
Like, everyone remembers who finished. We don't even know who won gold in that.
No, we absolutely don't. And, like, it's funny. I've seen some social media accounts try to be like, hey, here's the gold medal winners. And everybody's like, we don't care. Give us more of the guy who may or may not be John Wick. Like, that man for sure has killed somebody. Like, he even talked about, he's like, yeah, in my military training, you're supposed to leave both eyes open. I'm just a natural shooter. Like, oh, man. That guy's got some darkness in his past that he turned into being an Olympic athlete. Mm. So I love, though, that, like, and isn't this typical 2024 that the memes are being more celebrated in this Olympics than the actual Olympic athletes or Olympic wins, like, especially in our country? Like, the most memorable for me is going to be Snoop Dogg in full equestrian gear, giant dongers on French pole vaulters, and Turkish assassins that are disguised as Olympic athletes.
I mean, that will be the easily for the most of the population, the everlasting moments for sure, because, I mean, we've been using the same memes forever, at least. I mean, maybe Gen Z are doing things differently, and our kids will probably do things differently, but for the vast majority of the internet users right now, yeah, we've been using the same memes for a long time, so I'm sure that many of these will live on in infinity for quite some time still. So yes,
Hawk Tua spit on that thing.
Yeah, no one cares about that.
That's what I mean. It's been replaced, and I am here for it.
There was I don't think there was really any meme worthy moments to come out of that Rough Rider game on Saturday night, as we kind of alluded to. The Riders did the things that the Riders have often done over the years.
Oh, my God.
And lost a game to a team that had been struggling horribly throughout the season to this point. So we will get into that and a whole bunch more. But we can make this very quick today because we are recording this early on a Monday.
Yes.
So I can tell you, for everyone, for the Pile of Bones Brewing Company, that both of us just have coffee in our cups.
I will say yesterday had white IPA and Lucky Bastard Saskatoon Berry iced tea on a nice Sunday fun day at the beach.
I enjoyed a Pile of Bones Cosmic Celebration yesterday.
Ooh, nice.
Which is you know, sort of their take on a New England IPA, nice and juicy, but also a little on the dry side, which is quite just why I enjoy that one a fair bit as well.
I might have to pick some of those up as we have Maya's birthday party today, because, you know, you can't be sober at a 3-year-old's birthday party.
Sure.
I was kidding on that. I might have one or two, though.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's fair. Rider fans probably had at least one or two on Saturday night after the game, as the 0-7 Elks came to town and then thoroughly thrashed the Riders for the most part, going on to a 42-31 victory, which was a little flattering given one touchdown in garbage time late. Why Jack Cohn didn't get some reps there, I'm not really sure. But anyway, this is not one of those moments where we're necessarily sitting here like the John and I are just, you know, gleaming and waiting to come on here and say, we told you so.
But
we kind of, I mean, I still didn't have the guts to actually go through with fully picking the Elks on Three Down Nation's picks this week.
Yeah.
I thought for sure, I'm like, well, they'll probably at least cover the spread, but I'm like, I figured at the end of the day, it would be kind of a weird game, which it was in different ways, and the Riders would find a way to pull it out at the end, because that's kind of how these games with the Elks have gone, because the Elks would eventually elk, and the Elks tried to elk. There was definitely some things they did in that game that left you scratching your head still. But at the end of the day, you know, we talked about it last week on this show, where this has happened. And this is not a shot against Corey Mace. This isn't even anything to do with Craig Dickinson era. I mean, it's happened in the Corey Chamberlain era. It's happened in pretty much every era of this franchise for the last number of decades. Is a team that is easily the worst team in the league coming into a game against the Riders, especially at home, especially when the Riders are favorites.
Especially when the home crowd is a pretty good turnout as well.
Yeah, almost 30,000 on Saturday.
Oh.
And they lose. And I it's remarkable in a sense that it just keeps happening. And you can almost say your watch to it at least once a year that they're just going to have a dumbfounding loss to someone. And I mean, part of it is that's professional football, especially in a 9-team league. there are no secrets in this league, especially within the division. You're going to find ways to eventually beat a team. And I remember there was a bit of a discussion on the three-down chat during the game because Andrew Hoskins, our guy from Edmonton, at one point was convinced the Riders were going to win and the Elks were actually going to go 0-18. And both Hodge and I were like, no. Like, not necessarily the Elks were going to win that game, but it's, I think, like we've talked about this before, it is impossible to go 18-0 in the CFL, and I firmly believe it's also impossible to go 0-18, and that 0-7, the odds keep getting higher that you're going to win eventually. And Kel Surprise, the Elks finally started Trey Ford, and they won.
Well, as it seems to be the only time that they do win is when they start Trey Ford. And this Elks team, I get it, 0-7, absolute shit show. I mean, obviously, McLeod Bethel-Thompson is washed up, right? But Dusty Nielsen brought up an interesting point on the broadcast that Edmonton has three last possession losses.
They do.
Year. So they're a bad team.
Yep.
Right.
I mean, bad teams find ways to lose, right? So
exactly, as they always do. But it's not like they're getting the doors blown off of them every single week.
They did last week against Hamilton.
that was. But I mean, it's almost like they needed that.
Yeah.
Like they needed that so you can unequivocally say, okay, McLeod Bethel-Thompson ain't it. And I'm glad, as a big Trey Ford fan, as we've made all the jokes that their best player has been sitting on the bench all year, and to see a Canadian guy, a U Sports guy, finally given the opportunity, like, you know, I'm not cheering against the Riders, although it does mean that more of you awesome people generally listen to us when they lose. But it's just, I like seeing Trey Ford do good things, but it was funny in this one, it wasn't even Trey Ford that...
No. I mean, Trey Ford had his few moments, but this was not... This was not a Trey Ford circus game. This wasn't like that play against Toronto last year when he ran around for like 10 minutes and eventually found a guy in the end zone. Like, he had some spurts. He had his moments like he always did. But for the most part, the Elks just had a game plan ready for it. In a sense, deployed sort of what Calgary used to do with John Cornish.
Yes.
In a way that it was like, okay, we know they're coming to try and stop Trey Ford from being Trey Ford. So... okay, let's not use Trey Ford for the most part. I mean, he was still the quarterback. He still made some throws. He still had the odd runs. You can't not use your quarterback.
Yeah, 100%. But it's not like we're going single wing here, we're Army against Navy.
They weren't Wildcat all game. But they decided also, it's like, okay, we're going to use the fact that they are, you know, that the Riders would be extra honed in on Trey Ford to then make sure that their other guys are open. And I think what happened was, and we've seen this, and I think it's been talked about a lot on both post-game shows and in different spots, is because of the Trey Ford factor, the Riders couldn't just, you know, as Corey Mace said coming into the game, they couldn't, quote, tackle by population.
No.
Which is a great line. I love that line. Yeah, and because you're just that little bit more spread out because it's like, okay, we know they may hand off to Javon Leak, but Trey Ford may also run somewhere.
Yeah.
And so we kind of have to keep our feet in both buckets a little bit. And then you're never really fully committed to one. And I guess the plan probably would have been for the Elks is whichever one ended up being the one that the Riders kind of leaned more towards, they'd go the other way. And that's pretty much what we saw as Javon Leak went for like 106, almost 170 yards. The Elks rushed for 267 yards when the Riders had been giving up fewer than 50 yards per game on the ground coming in. So in terms of losses, like this is a painful loss for this team because that is the heart and soul of what they do, and they took it right in the mouth.
Absolutely. This wasn't like a fluky Edmonton last-second field goal win after a tipped interception. This was the Riders are built on defense and stopping the run, and Jarius Jackson and co over at Edmonton, holy shocker, they've got a good coaching staff. By the way, too, quick aside before I get into this, how good was it to see Rod Peterson absolutely humbled as he was sitting there pumping Chris Jones's tires when the Riders were up big early, only to have the Elks turn around? That was, to me, was the sweetest part of the Elks winning, was that guys like Peterson were like, oh, no, Chris Jones, they're going to suck now that Jones is gone. No, Jones never runs that game plan that Jarius Jackson came up with. And I almost wish we could just
They're still not well coached. I'm not going to go that far, but
On
1 week, they found the plan that worked. No question.
Well, and I think that plan, if you install it moving forward, and I wish we could just pipe in Dan Plaster for like 3 minutes to give a smart football talk, because I'm just a dummy that plays a lot of NCAA football and regurgitates information that I'm told. Now, in some of his good moments on the broadcast, Glenn Suter was doing a very good job of showing how they were disguising using often all three, Trey Ford and two running backs, or Trey Ford, Leak, and a receiver, which way the ball was going. Like, when Glenn Suter was good during the broadcast, he did a really good job of showing what they were doing to use misdirection, to mix it up. You weren't really sure who was getting that, and expose the Riders' inability to tackle one-on-one, which is, again, Dustin Nielsen brought it up, saying, hey, the best way to tackle is to gang tackle, and they weren't able to do that because of the misdirection, right? Mm-hmm. And that was a big part of it. Like, it's almost like the Riders weren't prepared for that, to see so much backfield motion, to see what the running backs were doing. Like, it was, to Edmonton's credit, it was a brand new look that is now on film, that is now out there. They came out with something that they haven't played the rest of the season. I'm with you. I still don't think that's a well-coached team, but Jarius Jackson is maybe auditioning for an offensive coordinator role next year, showing that, hey, I do know how to use the tools around me when I'm allowed to use those tools.
I mean, when he's allowed to use those tools, he had 2 weeks to use that tool, and he still didn't.
I mean, it takes time to come up with a game plan.
I suppose, but...
I mean, it's taken me two seasons to make Boise State an offensive wagon in NCAA Football 25, right? So by that logic, if it takes a dummy like me, you know, like, 20-some games, it should take, somebody who's actually apparently employed at this, I'd give him a game or two. I'm not saying I'm a Jarius Jackson fan, but... that was a good game plan.
Yep.
That was a very good game
plan.
And
they're professional athletes, they're professional coaches. They're going to have their moments, and things are going to go well at times. And I mean, I don't know if that is actually sustainable for the rest of the year for them. But it worked on this day, and they got the win for it. But, you know, from a Rider perspective, you know, that's a tough L to take. I mean, there's the good news is that they're still in the mix. The
yes.
Lions also shit the bed this week.
Did they ever? In
historic fashion, quite frankly.
Ooh.
And
it was historic. It was the fewest first downs the BC Lions had ever gotten in a game. And they still held Winnipeg to 6 field goals.
Yeah.
Thank God for Sergio.
So, I mean, the race in the West is tightening up a bit. Of course, Winnipeg and Calgary have kind of crawled their way back into it now a little bit. And so, this is just kind of what we expected. I don't think, you know, the way the year started, the way Saskatchewan and BC were pulling away from the rest of the pack in the West, I thought we were all kind of surprised.
Yes.
I think for the most part, we kind of expected this division to maybe not necessarily be as strong as it once was, but fairly tight. And that's kind of where we're headed, because I think even at 5-2, or, you know, when they were at 5-1, it was like, okay, are the Riders actually this good? Like,
right.
It's a new coaching staff. It's a new regime. They were going to be tested at some point. This was not going to be smooth sailing throughout the entire season. And quite frankly, I don't think you want it to be smooth sailing throughout the entire season, because we've seen it too many times. I mean, the Argos went 16-2 last year, basically faced no adversity whatsoever, and then completely shit the bed in the East Final.
Yeah.
When things started to go wrong, they spiraled very quickly and they just couldn't recover from it. So I think, and we've seen it time and time again in the CFL. I mean, how many times did that happen to the Calgary Stampeders in the West Final or the Grey Cup during their dominant run? Like, we've just seen it time and time again. So I think it's, you know, as much as you don't want to lose football games, in the long run, over the course of a marathon of a CFL season, a little bit of a dip isn't always necessarily a bad thing. In often cases, it's a good thing because, like Edmonton last week, sometimes it exposes some things that you've been maybe a little reluctant to do, and then you make those changes. And you sort of tighten up a little bit. You're able to tighten the nuts and bolts a little bit that have maybe come loose, but you kind of gotten away with it because you're either A, still winning football games, or B, as Corey May said, you know, sort of against the losses against BC and Montreal, you still kind of generally looked like yourself, so you weren't really feeling that bad.
Yeah.
But then you get punched in the mouth, and then it's like, okay, it's time to wake up. And, you know, that's not to say they're going to go on and win their games the rest of the season. There's probably still going to be some ups and downs before this whole thing is said and done. But you need those down times to kind of get the feeling and know, and to kind of get the feeling and sort of learn from it. And now we're going to see what this team is really made of.
Ohio seniors, it's time to make the right call for better Medicare benefits with Medical Mutual. Plans start at $0 per month and include $0 doctor visits and $0 generic prescription drugs. visit medmutual.com/review or call 1-866-966-9338 to find a plan today. MedMutual Advantage plans are HMO, HMO, POS, and PPO plans offered by Medical Mutual of Ohio with a Medicare contract. Enrollment in a MedMutual Advantage plan depends on contract renewal.
Right, and this loss entirely shifted the narrative. I mean, even you and I were saying in this podcast, you know, when you lost to BC, you kind of expect to lose that one. You lost to Montreal, kind of expect to lose that one. But I was surprised to see how quickly on social media in the post game shows and all the reaction was the Riders are now 1-3 in their last four. Yeah. Right, like again, I think you and
not,
I are both
not incorrect, but
right. I mean, but it is a correct stat, but it's almost something that I think everybody kind of overlooked because, as Corey Mannix said, yeah, they look like themselves in those two losses, and they were two games that you weren't really expecting them to win. But then they come out, and all of a sudden, it's like, holy shit, this team has only won once in its last, four games. Things have been good. You kind of expected those. It's when you get the one that you don't expect that punches you in the mouth and changes everything is when you can start looking internally and going, okay. And I think now, you know, it's kind of been sunshine and roses in Ryderville for most of this year, right? Now, you know, Corey Mace and the coaching staff and everybody gets to start dealing with a little bit of heat from a fan base that's going, yeah, we're 5-3, but we're also 1-3 lately. So it's going to be interesting to see how they respond, how the game plans change, how the players change. I think this now has a chance, and we all know that this stretch was going to be absolutely hellacious for this team, right?
Oh, yeah, I mean, now they got a quick turnaround this week to travel to Ottawa to face a pretty good football team.
Right, and it doesn't get any easier from there. You're right. Ottawa's good. Short week. Then you're hosting Montreal, and then you're at Toronto, who I think of
which could be, in theory, the Chad Kelly return game.
Right. It shouldn't be, but it could be, right? Yeah. So you're all of a sudden, you're into a tough year. You missed kind of your goodwill, and now you're into a, like, sneaky tough stretch right now with Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal, and then the back-to-back against Winnipeg. That's the defense at least suddenly looks like it has a pulse in Winnipeg.
Well, I mean, I think we're seeing it across the league, and this is going to be true for every single team in the league. There is no easy stretch now.
No.
Like, we were talking about this last night amongst the guys on three down was how insane it is to try to do power rankings right now. I use a different word to describe it. It was a cluster something. And because I was like, okay, like I think Hodge and I and a few of us agreed, like it was Montreal is one, Ottawa after this week is two. And after that, I mean, for the most part, you can make it just about an argument for anyone to be anywhere. I mean, no, within reason, like, yes, Hamilton and Edmonton aren't quite going to be up in that 3-4 range, but between three and I guess at that point seven, you could probably make an argument for just about any team to be in any of the one of those spots. So, and Hamilton and Edmonton are improved from where they were, especially with Trey Ford playing now.
Right.
So, yeah, it's a tough stretch, but I think literally unless, you know, someone's wheels fall off or something bad really happens to a team, there is no free space on the bingo card for the rest of the year for anybody. So this is going to be, this could be one of the most chaotic finishes to a season we've seen in the CFL in quite some time.
Well, I would absolutely agree, because you're just looking at the numbers, and again, Trey Ford's numbers aren't huge, but we know the impact that he has on that football team. He makes them, you know, relevant. Bo Levi Mitchell and the other team that you can argue might be the worst in the league is having a career season for Bo Levi Mitchell.
Yeah, and I, like,
2,500 passing yards and 18 touchdowns.
Yeah, and he had a tough week this week, but I mean, and I don't think Hamilton is actually that good, but they are capable of surprising you and putting up something in a game if they need to and can. Like, these are professional football players; they're going to have their moments, right?
Right, and there is no, like, last year Edmonton was comically bad.
Yeah,
last year Ottawa was comically bad. Like, you
the last 2 years, the Riders couldn't do anything after Labor Day. Like,
right, exactly. So there's three teams that after Labor Day, you're basically going, yeah, okay, I don't really need to pay a lot of attention to this. This is really reminding me of, I want to say it was the 2011 season when Winnipeg made the Grey Cup, and I think they won the East Division. I think that was the year that BC came out of nowhere after starting slow. And
yeah,
then
they started like 1-9 and went all the way to the Grey Cup and won.
Yeah, exactly. And Winnipeg won the East, I want to say, two games over 500. Like, that's what this season is starting to shape up to be, right? Like,
sure, I think the only team we're confident in for sure is Montreal.
Yeah,
You, like, no, I believe they will probably ride that number one spot all the way to the end of the year. What happens below them is anyone's guess.
but like 2011, it almost reminds me, though, of, I want to say it was Calgary. It was either Calgary or Edmonton that had one great season. And when it came to the playoffs, as you mentioned, you know, it's good to face some adversity, that it was almost similar. That Calgary was just like this unstoppable wagon, comes to the playoffs, and BC go ahead and beats them.
Oh, yeah, because BC had already had won like 10 games in a row at that point after starting so horribly.
well, and they basically were in win-now mode every single game, right?
So, well, and it's the same. And I mean, the city of Montreal Alouettes fans know this story well. They went through it from the Anthony Calvillo years. I mean, he won his first Grey Cup, and then they made a bunch of them in a row and lost them all because they just cruised through the East every year.
Well, that's it.
Right? Until they finally got the other two against the Riders. But before that, there was, you know, a similar story for the Alouettes back then, as we talked about Calgary for a while.
Like, yeah.
The CFL tends to have this team, and we've seen them. And so, I mean, I think Montreal has faced a bit of a bump, so we'll see. And I think they are wired differently than some other front-running teams that we've maybe seen in the CFL, because I believe they could go, like, in theory, they obviously can't now this year, but if they went 18-0, they would still find some way to think that no one believed in them. And legitimately think it. Like, this, they're not some made-up, contrived thing just to say it. Like, I think even though it's completely wrong, they would somehow still believe it.
Well, it's they're so salty in that way that, like, last year
I completely understood and completely agreed with them, and that's why I picked them to win the Grey Cup.
But even it was the second, and I think I remember texting you at Grey Cup week when it was like, there's no French anywhere. And I'm like, ah, crap, they're going to win, right? Like, you cannot say anything. Like, Montreal is like a hornet's nest that if you disturb it in the slightest way, your ass is getting stung. So let's all just collectively say nothing but really nice things about Montreal from here for the rest of the season.
Well, I guess I may have given them some ammo over the weekend.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Joel, what'd you do?
Well, I wrote a piece that had something to do with them that very much we knew infuriated them, because we heard Jason Maas on the broadcast. we have not heard from Hulk Jason Maas in a while, but I think it's worth talking about this because the command center has certainly been a thing in the CFL of late.
Yeah.
The officials, they've had their ups and downs, but generally speaking, I think on the field, still some of the best work you'll see in professional sports.
Yes.
And I think that'll be proven in the few weeks when the NFL season and the NCAA season starts up, just how much better CFL officiating is than those two leagues.
Yep.
But the command center, I don't know if it's the infusion of Andy Fantuz or what, but this thing is just going completely off the rails, and I mean, for the last few years, no one's had an idea of when they'd chime in or not in terms of like the decisions that they can apparently make just on their own. Like we have no clue, and that's continuing.
Right.
But we
saw it in the game where are good times where they step in where, you know, as much as Rider fans and everybody's or Elks fans were complaining, oh, that's the softest rough in the passer ever. This is a cut and dry rule. You touch a quarterback in the head, you get a flag. Like that's like,
yeah, it was a slap to the head move. I know it's a forcible blow, but I mean, his head moved. So we've seen that called time and time again.
Exactly. And it's going to be called as you know, with the awareness of concussions and everything like that, you touch a guy's face, you're going to get the call, right? So there is good that they are doing, but
and,
as
I mean,
you are
and
saying,
as kind of weird and chintzy and maybe unnecessarily slowing down the game as it was, the Elks defensive line did kick the ball as well that one time, which is delay of game. So.
Yes. No, you are also correct on that. But it's there has been. And this is really like I was trying to rack my own brain after reading your piece on the command center, and you and I are both big advocates of the CFL officials, saying that, you know, and I honest to God, we're not just saying this to suck up the league. I honest to God believe, as a guy that consumes, as you and I consume more football than the average bear, that they are the best at what they do, which is amazing considering they're all part time, right? Yeah. So. This isn't two guys that, you know, we're not two guys that sit there and, oh, you suck, you suck, you suck, you suck, right? Like, this is legitimate criticism because the command center, I don't think Andy Fantuz should be running this thing next year because it's a bit of a shit show.
Yeah, it's definitely felt like it's taken a step backwards. And I mean, Al Bradbury's in there too now. I believe he started there last year. And I mean, to me, and we'll start with the less egregious one.
Yes.
Was the play Saturday night in the Rider game where Ajoa Joe made a circus catch along the sideline. Real time, watching the game live from the press box, I did not think he was anywhere close to catching that football.
Nope.
So when Corey Mace threw out the challenge flag, I was like, what?
And I was watching on the broadcast. Like I was watching live on the big screen in my basement. So I had like the ultimate view, and I was like, I thought the same thing. I'm like, why are you challenging? Like even Ajoa Joe, normally when guys know they make a catch, they're getting up and they're gesturing, throw the flag. Ajoa Joe got up, and it was actually kind of endearing. He looks at the side judge and like holds his like fingers like an inch apart and goes, that close.
Yeah.
Like he wasn't arguing. Like he's like got this big Ajoa Joe smile on him. He kind of turns to the official and goes, oh, I was that close. So then I was surprised to see the flag came out. And you're right. When I saw those replays, I'm like, oh shit.
Of a sudden the replays come on and I'm like, there could actually be an argument that he caught the football. And then, you know, I saw some screen grabs that Ben Grant from Toronto sent. And I was looking at them and I'm like, in my heart, I think that was a catch.
Yes.
However, it was so close and so borderline that it is one of those scenarios where whatever was called on the field, at least you would hope, whatever was called on the field would be kind of what said. So I think if it was called a touchdown in real time, it probably would have stayed a touchdown. And because it was called incomplete, it stayed incomplete. The only sort of qualm with the whole situation was as a potential scoring play, it could have been and probably should have been automatically reviewed. Like Corey Mace should not have had to challenge that play, but that's sort of okay. But I can understand why that call wasn't overturned, though. I do believe it was probably a touchdown, but barely. But if you're not 100% sure, that's the way the command center is supposed to work.
Well, and then you don't get into the situations. Remember the famous Calvin Johnson catch for Detroit in the NFL that literally caused the NFL to go, we are all overthinking this. We need to simplify the catch rules. Like, we can't get to the point where we're galaxy braining this thing as to what is a catch and, you know, what is it? And that's the beauty of the CFL. It's got the simple catch rules. And I'm with you. I really hoped. But again, the way the command center's been this year.
Yeah.
I don't know what they would have said, right? Like that whole Montreal snafu, like, which is your piece, which was a very well written piece, was about. Like,
yeah. So if for some reason you missed it on Friday night, there was a play where Bo Levi Mitchell threw to his fullback James Tuck. He gained some yards and then clearly fumbled the football. In the official's eyes, he was down by contact. He wasn't. Whatever. We've talked about this a million times. In real time, things happen fast. Officials on the field will make mistakes. No big deal. Right. I have no problem with the original call on the field being what it was. Any sort of questions about anything in that regard, no issues whatsoever. So it goes to video review. And you see the play. Instantly, you're like, okay, that's clearly a fumble. Like, the guy is nowhere near the ground.
Right.
And the ball pops out. The Alouettes jump on it, though Wesley Sutton, and I guess this must be the interpretation that they found, was didn't make an immediate recovery because he kind of bumbled a little bit before they actually gained control.
Right.
And, okay, sure. If that's the black and whiteness that the CFL command center is bound by, then okay, they have to make this call, then. But maybe something should be done about that. And I'm not generally, in terms of especially video review and certain specific calls, into giving much discretion sometimes, because I think that just leads to far more confusion than just leaving things as black and white, you know, sort of rulings.
But you need a touch of that. That's why you hire ex-officials and ex-players to be in these roles. That's why guys like you and me aren't running the command center. Otherwise, we just say, no, it's this. It's cut or dry.
Well, I said in the press box during the Ajoa Joe catch, I was like, you know what? I'm invoking the cool as hell clause. That's a touchdown. there was all kinds of calls across football all the time that I would just, especially ones that they're trying to overturn. Like, nah, that play's cool as hell. Call stands. Like,
I mean, you almost need the social media guy. You need not the CFL social media guy. You need somebody from the sickos committee sitting there going, yeah, that's gonna play. Let's go ahead and keep that a touchdown.
Anyway, but so the play like. Tuck's fumble, and it's like, okay, he didn't actually secure possession immediately, but right. I mean, you know, 9/10 of a second later, they do, and there is not a single Hamilton Ticat anywhere in sight.
No.
So can we use a little bit of common sense here and say, okay, clearly had this play continued as called as a fumble, the Alouettes were going to recover that football.
Yes.
Like, it's pretty obvious to everyone watching, and to get such a ticky-tack over, like, half a second of whether they had control or not is just... it's just absolutely absurd. Like, that should... and the only saving grace is that it ended up having absolutely no effect on the football game, as the Alouettes went on to win pretty easy. So they got away with it in a sense, but... my goodness, in terms of, like, if that's sort of the standard, if that's, you know, the idea of video review is for, you know, to overturn the clear and obvious, and I have never seen anything as clear and obvious as that, and they did not overturn it, so what are we even doing here?
You're absolutely right, and that's a rule that I know, talking to officials, that you kind of have to use your imagination for, right? Like, you know, was it a clear and obvious recovery of the ball? Was the team like football is very good in the fact that they allow logic to prevail in a situation like that. Like any other sport, you know, like hockey, we've seen it a million and one times. Play is dead, right? Yeah. Whistle's blown. The intent of the official was to blow the whistle, so the play is dead. Meanwhile, football is the only sport that's like, ah, you know what? That was 100% going to be recovered by those guys, so we're going to give them the ball, right? So it takes away from the spirit of the officiating and the way that the rule book is designed in professional football, saying, okay, this is going to be black and white. We're going to treat this like hockey. We're going to treat this like baseball. When you have a rule book and you have officials that are trained to, I mean, I hate to say it, use their imagination and basically determine what was going to happen because of, you know, cold, hard logic. So to see that going away, it's not a great thing. Like, what do you do? I get it. You don't want the command center stepping in and saying, this is how it is. You know, you don't want to undermine your officials, but that's all it did is you undermine the crew. And it's again, it was an Andre Peru game. We love Andre. Like, I think he's a fantastic official, one of the best in professional football. And the NFL is absurd for not ever giving him a look, or any other CFL officials a look, as this should be a developmental league. But like, it makes the crew look bad when it's really like Al Bradbury and Andy Fantuz who really have to figure it the F out.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, and it's just...
and you know you're not going to, and the other thing too is the league's such a gong show, is you know you're not going to get an explanation from anybody.
No.
There's nobody you can ask and be like, hey, what is the command center's job? Is it to, you know, be another official, or is it to interpret the rule book black and white? So you can't even ask the question. You can't get the answer, and it's just going to be ho-hum, everything's fine, this is the CFL.
And you know what I saw last night watching the English broadcast of the Pesapalo game that was on?
Which I still haven't watched. I got to watch that today.
So, yeah. And you'll be amazed by this, and then on a few levels. So there was a play where the ball is hit way out in the outfield. It keeps going and going and going. Because it's like this game is just happening in like what seems like a public park. Because it's a lower level, this guy on a bike starts appearing out onto the screen. He kind of turns into the ball and stops it, and it sort of bounces off and goes the other way. And so they're all of a sudden... so the play, you know, they kind of let the play out, and then they actually go to review the play to see if there was fan interference from this guy. I believe they ruled that there was. I can't remember exactly what the ruling was. But anyway, they reviewed it, so I don't know if the play on the field actually changed, whatever, they reviewed it. And then in between innings, they went and talked to the head official of that game to talk about the review. They actually interviewed the official about the review that just happened like 10 minutes ago.
Amazing.
It was remarkable. It was incredible television. And I mean, the interview was only like 10 seconds, but it's like, hey, we have this one question about this one play. Can we just get an answer for it right now, please?
Right. How is it that second division professional Finnish baseball is doing better at this than any other professional sports league? That is it. Okay. Next CFL lockout, we are a Finnish baseball podcast.